We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Andy Estimate Trucking LLC, who would you rather partner with Xavier Watts at safety using your evaluation? Luke Talich, Clarence Lewis, Adon Schuler, or Ben Minnick? Which pairing would be closest to 2019?
I'll say this, Ryan. I don't really care. I just want whoever wins that job to
step up. You also have to throw Rod Hurd into that
conversation. That's the thing I was going to say, right? Like, Rod Hurd's going to be part of the conversation. I don't care if it's Rod Hurd. I don't care if it's Luke Talich. I don't care if it's Adon Schuler. I just need a high level of play, and I want multiple guys to play. Based on the evaluations we have of these players and who I think of that group is most ready to play now at safety, I would say Adon Schuler. Yeah. Potentially Clarence Lewis, potentially, but he hasn't played there yet. I think Luke Talich might be the eventual replacement to Xavier Watts down the road. I think Luke might still be a year away from being a starting caliber player. I think right now he's more of like, you know, a depth guy, but it wouldn't shock me if Luke makes a jump here over the next few months and is pushing for that job as well of just the guys mentioned here. Right. I think the expectation is that Rod Hurd will be that guy. But if one of these guys beats him out, my thing is, Ryan, I don't really care which one of these guys has the breakout. They just need somebody to break out and just lock down that number two spot. And then they need at least one or two of these guys to push themselves. Hey, coach, I'm good enough to play. You may not want to start me for whatever reason, but you got to play me and I can help this football team. Cause that's going to really take some of the, you know, talk about earlier, some of the reps numbers and the reps burden off of Xavier Watts and whoever the starter is. If they are trying to make a deep run, and I know this staff believes this team's capable of making a run, they're going to need at least two of those guys to step up this year.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
All right, we got John A1. Can counter run schemes be more effective with explosive backs like Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love, or is that scheme more offensive line driven?
I think counters can be more effective from a home run standpoint with guys like that, but I think counter can be a great concept with a power back. It just depends on how you block it and how you get to it. I don't think it's necessarily more effective because it's a slower developing play. You know, so sometimes the more explosive guy, you run the risk of, are you getting there too quickly, right? You got to let the block set up effectively. So it just depends on how you want to get to it. I think when you're talking about more explosive backs, the run that I think could be more effective is the zones. I think you could see more just home, cut that thing. Like Josh Adams just made a killing on inside zone and buck sweep, Ryan, in 2017. Why? Because it's one cut and go, and if I get to that first level, I'm gone. You know, where a bigger back maybe, you know, gets a 25-yard gain. And then buck sweep is just stretch, and explode through the hole. You want some of that burst on that particular play. You can be successful with any kind of back on counter, but the biggest thing is with counters, you need patience and timing, because if you get down there too quickly, it's not going to work. If you're too late, it's not going to work. So I think the quick one cut and go runs, duo, counter, I mean, inside zone and like buck sweep are the runs where you're really going to say those are the runs that are now more effective because you have more explosive running backs, in my opinion.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's more dictated for me, John, based upon the offensive line to be able to run counter well, because yes, you need running back patience, obviously you need to be able to time it well, but ultimately front side, you need to be able to block down and be able to create movement. And then on the back side, you need to be able to have pullers that are able to get to their spots in a good and concise fashion. Like, don't even think about speed. Like, you need to be able to have guys that also, one, pack a pop at the point of attack and also get their body in proper positioning as well as pullers. So I think that offensive lines can dictate that a little bit more on a counter look, but then obviously running backs need to do their part to fulfill that assignment. We have John A1. In a way too early prediction, would you predict a Notre Dame wide receiver to be drafted in the 2025 draft in rounds 1-3? Oof. I would say 1-3. The only guy that I would say, if draft eligible guys, that has a chance is Chris Mitchell, just because of the speed. I mean, the NFL goes bananas for speed on the next level. So if Chris Mitchell is a legit 4-3 guy, like he has kind of told us all that he is, then if he has production at Notre Dame this year, and it doesn't have to be similar to what he did last year, but let's say he has 50 receptions for 800 something yards and he goes to the combine and runs 4-3 something, then he has a chance to go in the first three rounds. I think Jaden Thomas could have a really good season, but I think that some people will just have the question of, can he separate consistently on the next level? That might knock him down boards a little bit. Obviously Deion Colsey, if he could stay healthy, maybe, but like, again,
but even Deion hit, let's just say Deion has a Miles Boykin type breakout. The thing that's going to hurt Deion is, again, it's the 1 year thing. The fact that Miles Boykin and Chase Claypool were busts, if we're going to be honest. Yeah. But then the bigger thing too is the injury history. Like, Miles didn't have much of an injury history. Deion will. And so, yeah, I don't even know if I would take a chance on him. If Deion balls out this year and comes back and balls out next year, then I'm taking a chance on him in day two. But I don't know, even now, I don't know that I would do that. Hey, let me ask you this question, Mark. What if Jaden Harrison ends up becoming like a fixture receiver with his return? Do you think he could be a guy? Because I've been told by some people around the program that he's actually their fastest wide receiver. Do you think, or is he more of a niche player?
No, it's a niche. I mean, unless he comes out and he's just a dynamic receiver, which I don't know necessarily that he's going to be that guy. But I mean, if he's a scheme touch guy and then also a dynamic, kick and punt returner, he'll be drafted for sure. But I think it's more a day three guy than a top three round guy.
What's the range usually for guys like that in the draft, Ryan?
It depends how good of a receiver they are. I mean, if they're strictly a special teamer, they'll go mid to late day three because that's the only value they're going to bring. But if they're a guy that can also do some stuff as a receiver, then they'll move up boards a little bit. So, I mean, you'd have to tell me what his production is this year at Notre Dame.
Like, let's say he catches 45 balls for 550 to 600 yards as a receiver.
I mean, he'll probably go in the fourth round, somewhere in that ballpark, maybe a top 150 type of kid, but yeah.
So
I mean,
to be a day three guy, you're thinking he has to break out and be like an impact wide receiver is what you're thinking.
Yeah. Cause I mean, even guys that aren't, necessarily going to be high volume guys next level, like I think of like Devin Duvernay, right. Which is like kind of an interesting comparison because Duvernay was also very fast and a special teams guy, but like Duvernay was a legit receiver for Texas as well. You know what I mean? And he still went third round for like some concept there. So
to your point, Ryan, to put data to the point you just made, in his last year at Texas, he caught 106 passes for 1,386 yards and 9 touchdowns. To your point,
went in the third round, right?
Right. Third round pick. Yeah. So, again, that's exactly the, and it wasn't like that was, I mean, the year before he had 41 catches for 546 yards and 4 touches. That's still better than what Jaden Harrison did last year at Marshall.
Yeah.
Just to kind of put some numbers to that. Now the difference is Marshall so far has been a more dynamic returner than what Duvernay is. But like you said, you're not spending a third round pick on a return guy unless he's a Devin Hester, but Devin Hester could play other positions. That's the other thing. I mean, I get your point. I was curious.
I think Duvernay has made at least one Pro Bowl in the NFL as a returner as well. So, yeah.
All right. Let's get down. Hold on a second.
Joe Allen said, did any of the Pot of Gold offers not make it known or announce it? So there were a couple of guys that, for first and foremost, Joe, there were a couple of guys that are still kind of coming in, a couple of days later. I mean, we literally had one guy yesterday that tweeted out I forget what player it was that I think it was Calvin Carter, I believe, is the one. It was like, I was offered on Pot of Gold. I'm a little bit late, but you know, that type of deal. So there's a couple guys that announced late, and there's a couple guys that have not announced at all. So,
yeah. Which is telling, but some guys just aren't social media creatures
either. There's also a couple guys that did announce offers that we didn't know were going to be offered on Pot of Gold. So it all happens always.
This is one you and I were briefly talking about before the show started, Ryan. Let's pull this one up. This will be an interesting one.
John A. once said, which season was more impressive, 2015 Romeo Okwara or 2018 Julian Okwara?
I would go with Romeo's 2015 season. I thought Julian in 2018, here's really what it comes down to, Ryan. Julian at his best was more dynamic than Romeo at his best.
As a pass rusher, right? More than anything.
Just all around player. The difference for me is Romeo was a lot more steady. Romeo could make an impact even when he wasn't necessarily rushing the quarterback. You know, so like Julian's last, or the 2018, it wasn't even his last year. He had 12 and a half tackles for loss, 8 sacks, 38 tackles. And yeah, it was credited with 21 hurries. Like he was and he had an interception, if you remember that interception he had against Michigan. Romeo that year had 13 and a half tackles for loss. Speed too. Yeah, it was great. Great job getting a zone drop, got underneath a corner route, actually, like a deep out, looked like corner deep out. But he was only credited with 7 hurries, but he had 49 tackles. Like Romeo was the better all around player. Julian was the more flashy guy. But that's why Romeo's had a better career so far than Julian in the NFL, too, because Romeo was a grinder that was just, he was going to, you know, give you everything he had every game. Julian's the one that you're kind of like, does Julian want to play today? You know what I mean? That's kind of been his deal. And that's why Julian hasn't really, in my opinion, is why I'm not surprised at all that he hasn't panned out in the NFL so far. But yes. And also I'd say this, I would love to see what Romeo's numbers would have been if he would have played for Mike Elko and Clark Lee instead of Brian Van Gorder. That's the other part of this thing, you know? So, but that D line they had, Ryan, a very underrated D line in 2015, which just makes you even more mad about Brian Van Gorder wasting so much talent. I mean, you had 4 starting defensive linemen that year that all played in the NFL. Sheldon Day, Romeo Okwara, Isaac Rochelle, and Jerry Tillery were your starting defensive tackles that year. So
it's really funny because Julian and Romeo are very, very different football players. Like they are not similar at all. Like Romeo is very big, physical, edge setter, playing with power, strong hands. Julian is fleet of foot, explosive, bendy. Like they're very, very different football players. I would actually love to see them together at their peaks at Notre Dame, you know, because they could have been a dominant edge duo potentially. But
yeah, Julian should have been better. I'll say that and then go.
He didn't take the jump as fine as his. The year after 2018, he did not take the jump that he should have taken.
So, no, he had 7 tackles for loss and 5 sacks in 9 games. I only had 7 hurries and 19 tackles in 2019. Khalid Kareem was a much better college player than Julian was. But Julian was very flashy. Very, very flashy.
All right, we got Archer 452 says top 3 uncommitted 2025 players for me are running back. Pick one of Davidson, Davis, and Jackson. Defensive end, Dye or Damian Shanklin, and safety, Delaney or Trey McKnight.
I assume that we're talking about national here. I'm going to be honest with you, Archer. One thing I'm going to disagree with, I think Jadon Blair is a better safety than Trey McKnight, personally. I know Trey's ranked higher by most, but if I could only have one of those two guys, I would take Trey McKnight. At running back, I'm not familiar enough with
Davidson. Davidson's from modern day.
What did I say?
Davis is.
Yeah, I don't know who Davis. I'm not familiar with Davis. Who Davis is? Jackson, I think. Is he talking about Bo Jackson, who's a running back and a DB?
Or just said he was just answering John's question to you guys. So I think it's just Ohio State's. I guess.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that.
We had Irish Blood who said most likely to have a breakout at each level of the defense. Defensive line breakouts for you.
I'm hoping it's Jordan Patelho or Josh Burnham on the first level. What would be your pick for that one, Ryan?
Jordan Patelho would be mine. I'm going to fall into the same trap that I've done for 2 years, but I'm still going to pick Jordan Patelho.
Yeah. Can't help it. He's just flashed enough. Level two for me is going to be either Drake Bone or Jaden Alsbury. I'm going to go Drake for now because I think Drake right now has more of a clear path to starting. But, you know, Jaden would be my other potential for there. There's a lot of potential breakouts. So, I mean, would it shock me if Jalen Snead was the breakout at linebacker? Not at all. I mean, I think there's multiple. And that's where I kind of, Ryan, feel like I'm not worried about linebacker because it's not Drake or bust. If he doesn't pan out, they're in trouble. I mean, I even mentioned Kingston or Preston Zinner. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many good options that I feel like they're going to have three or four guys that are going to be good to go with Jack Kaiser. It's just who specifically would be, I'm not sure. I'm going to go Drake, Jaden, Jalen Snead, Kingston would be my order of prediction for breakout at linebacker.
Okay. Yeah, I would go with Drake Bowen as mine as well. He is, I think he has the potential to be a very good starting mic in 2024 and beyond. So I would go him. Secondary wise, I guess Christian Gray counts as a breakout, right? Like everyone kind of expects it, but I'll still will go Christian Gray.
That's my choice as well. That's an easy one for me. Yeah. Good question, Irish Blooded.
We had Dennis Healy says, any of you, in addition to Sean Stiers, planning on attending game one of the women's NCAA on Saturday? I am not. Dennis.
Yeah,
I am
you not. Live a little too far away, unfortunately. Yes. I won't either. We have some house stuff going on that day. Plus, I think the game starts at a time. There's a press conference, a Marcus Freeman press conference on Saturday. That'll make it a little hard to get over there as well. But otherwise, I would have liked to have gone. They play Kent State 2:15. So for anyone that is in town, 2:15 on Saturday at Purcell Pavilion, the ladies kick off the first round and then the second round. So the first two rounds are hosted at Notre Dame. So because they're a two seed. Mm-hmm. So then there was another question about the women's team that we'll just answer right now.
Fighting Mike 87 says, thoughts on the Notre Dame women being in the same region as South Carolina. In my opinion, I think it's better than being the number two against LSU's number three.
Well, I would say this. I agree with that for this reason, Ryan. I think they have a better shot at beating LSU than South Carolina. I don't know that they can necessarily beat either now that Kylie Watson's hurt, but I think they'd have a better chance against LSU. But the reason it's better that they're with South Carolina as a two is because they won't get South Carolina until the Elite Eight. They would get LSU in the Sweet 16 if it was 2 versus 3. So, and I don't know that they can beat either right now because of the injury to Kylie Watson. I think they could compete with LSU if they had Kylie Watson because, I mean, the guards at LSU would get into some problems trying to defend Hannah Hidalgo, in my opinion. Like, her speed and ability to attack the rim is just really impressive. But
we just made All-American as a true freshman, which is pretty insane.
There's There are two true freshmen on that all because Juju Watkins made that. Juju made it as well. Yeah.
She's incredible. Yeah. She's incredible.
Yeah, she's really good. There's a lot of young stars in college basketball right now, man, for the ladies. There's no doubt about that. But like for me, the accomplishment this year was getting where they're at now to me because again, they have six healthy scholarship players. So, well, there's some former walk-on. It's not. I'm talking about girls that were recruited to be scholarship players, right? They're down to six, and outside of really Nat Marshall, almost their entire post presence is gone. I mean, even Cass Prosper, who's kind of a wing, but she's like 6'1", 6'2". She can, you know, help you. I mean, she's out. She's been out all year. Not Kylie Watson's out. You haven't had Louis Miles all year. Emma Risch is out. Like, this is a depleted roster. It was a tremendous run to win the ACC title. Getting the two seed is an honor to me. Getting past the getting to the Sweet 16 is the expectation. Anything beyond that is just icing on the cake because of just how depleted they are. I mean, it's asking a lot for a team with six healthy players. Most of them are guards to make a run. It's going to be hard. It really is.
Christopher Hardy with the super chat. Oh, we already hit this one.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to bring Scrapple up Scrapple again. Yeah.
We talked this one too, Steve Rolfe. We got this one.
I gotta unstar these, man. And then when we got the one from Tyler as well. Okay, so we got all the super chats in. I just wanted to make sure, Ryan, that we had all the super chats answered. You know good, what I mean?
You're good. Yep. We had John A1. Now that it seems Notre Dame will be primarily an 11 personnel team, which grouping will be the secondary complement? 21 personnel or 12 personnel? What do you hope it would be?
Both. I mean, that's the thing, Ryan, is like there's value to both of them. If we're talking just pure numbers, which one will they use to a greater degree from a pure 12. Number standpoint? It's 12. Correct. Right. 12.
Yeah.
And Mike Denbrock has shown, like, there's a stat that I'm going to discuss in the upcoming video, and I'll just share it with you guys now. And this will be a members board only video. But when you look at LSU's formational and personnel use last year, Ryan, they used 11 personnel 94.7% of the time against the 9 Power 5. I don't care what they do against Grambling and Georgia State and Army. I broke down the 9 Power 5 games with Denbrock. So I didn't even break down the Wisconsin game because he wasn't there. That was related to the roster they have now, because they had the tight end depth chart was depleted by transfers and injuries. They had basically one healthy tight end most of the year. It's a true sophomore. Mm-hmm. And they're loaded at wide receiver last year. And their two back stuff was not really their, all their running backs are kind of the same guy, you know? So there wasn't they used 12 personnel in the 9 games I broke down, Ryan, 12 times. And most of those were near the goal line. That's it, 12 times in those 9 games. I went back and broke down the Notre Dame-Cincinnati game from 2021. They used 12 personnel 19 times in that game alone. Why? Because Leonard Taylor and Josh Wiley were both really good football players. So even though they had a really good 4-man rotational receiver, because remember, they weren't just Alec Pierce, Trey Tucker, and Tyler Scott. They also had Michael Young on that team, who was a regular in the rotation. So they had a good rotation of receiver, but they still ran a lot of 12 personnel because Josh Wiley and Leonard Moore were really good football players as well. Leonard Taylor. Leonard Moore.
Yep.
Whoops. That's going to be more like what we see from him than what we saw at LSU. Because what he did at LSU was determined by the personnel he had this year. They ran 12 personnel a lot more last year than this year. Not a ton, but a lot more last year because they had a deeper tight end room than they had last year. Than they did this year. So we'll see more 12 personnel, but I really hope we see 21 personnel become a regular part of what they do. But as we've said before, that's still a bit of a niche formation, in my opinion. It's not something that I think you can necessarily do 35, 40 times in a game and beat Georgia. Like, I don't know that you can. It's something that you can do 10 to 12 times, 15 times as a wrinkle because you're really hurting them with it in a game. But I don't know that it's something that's like a regular staple. So I think 11 and 12 will be the two things we see the most. What are your thoughts?
Well, I want to see 12 because it's Notre Dame, and there's a couple of positions that Notre Dame will always recruit better than just about anybody, and tight end is obviously on that short list, right? They're always going to have dynamic tight ends, and especially when Mitchell Evans is fully cleared and back. I mean, you're going to have Mitchell Evans, you're going to have Eli Raritan, you're going to have Cooper Flanagan, you're going to have a lot of good promise at tight end, obviously, for the 2024 season. So I think 12 will definitely have to be utilized. And then, I mean, we've already talked about 21 opportunities with getting Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love, you know, maybe mix in some Jabron Payne at times, like getting all those guys on the field at times. Like, it's going to be an interesting complement of one another. But I would agree that I think 12 would be the next highest number of volume as far as a consistent, you know, a consistent package outside of the 11 personnel. So
I do expect 11 personnel to be the main formation. I just don't think it's going to be the way that it was at LSU the last, or even what it was at Notre Dame in 2015, Ryan, because again, 2015, what was the issue? A lot of injuries. You had a true freshman in Alize Mack. Dylan Smythe got hurt in the second game of the year and didn't come back until I think the bowl game. So you were Alize Mack and then a banged up Nick Wisher, and that was kind of it, you know, that year. And so you saw heavy 11 personnel. It'll be dictated by his that's one thing Mike Denbrock has shown he's really good at in his career. He's going to tailor his offense. There's principles he believes in. He's going to build his entire emphasis, not system and scheme, because that is what it is, but he's going to build his emphasis is going to be built around the strengths of his current roster. He's not going to stubbornly be in 11 personnel 95% of the time and just rotate Mitchell Evans and Eli Raritan and Cooper Flanagan one at a time. He's too smart for that. You know what I mean? But we're definitely going to see 11 as the dominant formation, in my opinion, this year.
John A1 says, which transfer wide receiver has the most growth potential from where their game was with their previous program?
I'm going to go Bo Collins. I just think Bo has a chance to be a really good player in college. I just don't know that he was used correctly. Didn't always have the right quarterback. There's just a lot that I think Jaden Harrison, Ryan, you point out, could play receiver at Notre Dame. I don't know that his production is going to be much different than what it was at Marshall last year, because there's so many other receivers that he's going to be splitting time with. Jordan Faison, Jaden Greathouse. I mean, Jaden Thomas, Chris Mitchell, Cam Williams, Bo Collins, Deion Colsey. I think Deion has a chance to become a dude at Notre Dame, like for what they're going to do, 1,000 yards, all that. No, but I mean, I could see Bo becoming, by the end of the year, the guy that's making the big plays in the biggest moments. I could see that. I'm not predicting it, but I could see that for them. I mean, go ask Benjamin Morrison who gave him the most problems last year off the line of scrimmage. I know who it was on film. On film, it was Bo. You know, and I've never seen anybody spin Benjamin around like Bo did to him like twice last year. Once he caught the ball, the other time he didn't. He didn't because they didn't throw it to him.
Right.
But he's got potential to be a really good football player. And I think, you know, that size, that vertical ability, he's not a burner, but he can play vertically because of his size and length and things like that. I think he's the guy that has the most chance for growth, because he says growth potential. We're obviously, there's nothing. If Chris Mitchell has better numbers at Notre Dame than he did at Florida International, then this is going to be a freaking amazing year, right, for Notre Dame.
Well, I was actually going to take it a little bit of a different kind of viewpoint on it. So, like, production as far as growth, I think that Bo Collins would be my pick there. But if I'm talking about growth of a just all-around wide receiver skill set, I think it could be Chris Mitchell, because Chris Mitchell was obviously dynamic at Florida International, but I question if he was, like, the most well-coached all the time, right? Because, like, he is a very vertically oriented player. I think there's a lot of growth that he could have individually, because he is a guy that needed to add strength, and it looks like he's a little bigger than he was last year. I know he was listed at like 184 pounds, which is a great sign. So if the staff, a better strength and conditioning program, could they get more out of Chris Mitchell from a play strength perspective, for one? For two, him being able to work with Mike Brown, who I would assume, I mean, just my assumption, that he's probably a better and more accomplished wide receiver coach than what he had at Florida International. Can he become a more well-rounded wide receiver? You know, even if the numbers necessarily don't dictate that he was more prolific at Notre Dame in his 1 year than he was at Florida International in 2023, there's still a possibility that he leaves Notre Dame as a much better overall wide receiver than what he was at Florida International. John A1, last year, most of Notre Dame's wide receiver production seemed to come when guys were in the slots in spring camp. Who will win a majority of the team battles at slot receiver or the nickel defender?
Well, I sure hope it's the slot receivers. I like Jordan Clark and Micah Bell and Clarence Lewis are good football players, but I would hope that Jaden Greathouse and when he's out there, Jordan Faison and Jaden Harrison were winning more of those particular battles. One thing about that first part, though, right? That was a lot of how Jared Parker's offense was built. I mean, that's just the reality of it, is the slot was a very prominent position. The slot and the X were prominent positions. Mike Denbrock's offense has always been more geared towards the outside positions and getting more production from the outside position. So X, the boundary, which is X in his offense, has always been a very prominent position. The Z has always been a prominent position. One of the interesting things I'm going to break down is I actually have listed like who caught the ball, not number 8, number 11, but was it the X, the Z, or the F, which is what I call a slot. And I haven't done the data for that yet, but I'm very fascinated to see what that split was for LSU last year in those 9 games. I'm very curious to see what that's going to be. That I've got formations and motions as my first breakdown. I'm going to do run game after that. And then after the run game, I'm going to get into a lot of past stuff, some really interesting past stuff, which is going to be fascinating. So the numbers and film is what these are. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to doing it. Joe Allen says, who gets credit for the recruiting of the younger Faison, football or lacrosse? Both. They both do. Absolutely, they both do. They're both going to be a part of that conversation. We got one from Bobby S. What's the word on Eli Raritan? He hasn't been doing much in the two early practices. I don't know. Marcus Freeman's going to be addressing the media tomorrow. I'm sure that'll be a question that gets asked of him tomorrow. Lucky Ducks 512. Buy or sell, Micah Gilbert will have the most catches of the freshman receivers. I'm going to sell that, but I don't do it with any confidence because I could certainly see it. The reason I'm going to sell that is because I believe Micah's best position right now is going to be that boundary position, which is going to be pretty deep with Jaden Thomas, Bo Collins. I think we'll play some there, Deion Colsey. And then when you look at the field position, he could play there, but I just think we're going to see more of Chris Mitchell. I think Jaden Greathouse is going to play some there. I think Jaden's going to move around a little bit. And then, of course, I think Cam's unique skill set is going to be there. And there's more room for Cam to grow between now and then. So I'm going to sell that. But if you were to say you buy it, I would not argue with you one bit, because I think Mike is further ahead of Cam today, right now, for sure. And I've been very impressed with what I've seen from Micah Gilbert the first couple practices at Notre Dame. And as you guys know, we thought he was a very underrated player coming out. We had him as a top 150 kid, borderline top 100 recruit coming out of high school. Bobby S. asks, over under 1.5 more 2025 commits before the blue gold game, and also 3.5 more 25 commits before June, and over under 1.5 of them being cornerbacks. So first one, 25 commits before the blue gold game. So basically, will they get two? I'm going to say over, but not confidently. 3.5 more before June, I'm going to go under. And then over under 1.5 of them being cornerbacks, again, I'm going to go under, because if they get a cornerback, I think one of the cornerbacks I expect them to get, I don't think is going to commit till after officials in June. And I like where Notre Dame is at, but that's kind of always been his plan. So unless he changes his plan, I think that's going to happen more down the road. Pete Weber asks, what should we expect from the recruiting weekend this weekend? Do you know any of the plans for the kids? I mean, I wouldn't expect anything. I don't have any expectations that anyone's going to necessarily commit right now. Could it happen? Sure. There's a few kids we have our eyes on, but right now I don't know that anyone's going to pop this weekend. We'll do some digging to try to find out, nor do I think that there's anyone that Notre Dame's necessarily really, really pushing to commit this weekend. But if somebody commits, it wouldn't shock me. But as of right now, I don't know that there's plans of that happening at this point. Shamrock Sean, who do y'all think will pan out to be RB1 and wide receiver one? Well, look, here's the thing with RB1. I'm just going to tell y'all right now, stop talking about RB1 and RB2. It's really going to be 1A, 1B. And some weeks it's going to be Jeremiah Love. Some week it's going to be Jadarian Price as far as who has the biggest game. But every week, I'll be shocked if when we go into the season, game plans aren't built around both of those guys. Some weeks it may be more of a pro Jeremiah game. Some weeks it may be more of a pro Jadarian game. And there's going to be some weeks where those two as a combo just rip the opponent up, both of them. Here's a prediction I'll make next year. They'll both have 100-yard games at some point. That's an easy one. No, duh. I predict that there's going to be at least one game next year where they both have 100 yards rushing in a game. That's a prediction that I have. Not 100 yards of offense, 100 yards rushing. They'll both have 100 yards rushing in a game next year in the same game. That's more of what it's going to be like. Wide receiver one, it's a good question. If I had to pick today, I'd honestly pick Jaden Greathouse. I really think, I've said this before, I really think Jaden Greathouse is going to break out and be their best receiver next year. I just don't know. I just think the kid's combination of size and just feel for the game and athleticism and ball skills and confidence and just, I think he's going to be excellent. I could see it being Jaden Thomas. I could see it being Chris Mitchell. I could see it being Bo Collins. I could see it being Jordan Faison even. But I'm going with Jaden Greathouse. I just think Jaden's going to be that top guy. I, I don't know, man. Like, if he doesn't get hurt and get moved to the boundary last year, I don't even know if this is even a question. Even with all the guys coming in, I don't know this even a question. If he doesn't have to, if he could have just done what he did the first five games and been able to do that all year and all that, I think he would have been a 40 catch guy and we wouldn't be having this conversation at all. Bobby S says, how does Mike Brown and Mike Denbrock get enough reps and opportunities for all the slot guys? We all know what Faison can do. Great House looks much better. Harrison is the buzz of camp. I don't really care about buzz of camp, man. I mean, look, we saw one full practice with no pads and we saw another 5-minute thing. That's just people talking about, number one, it's people repeating what they're being told and acting as if it's evaluation with some folks. I know that's happening. And number two, it's just people saying, oh, he's really fast. He's really fast. But let's see him actually do receiver things first before we talk about the buzz of camp. They've had two practices. That's it, two practices. So let's see what they do. But to your point, there's three talented football players there. Number one, you may not see them try to get reps and opportunities for all three of them. That's going to be tough to do. One way to make it happen, though, is that, as I just said, Jaden, and I'm not saying this like you should know this, Bobby, because I said it way after you asked the question. So don't take it that way. But Jaden Greathouse can play multiple spots. Jaden Greathouse, look, Jordan Faison, to me, is a really good football player, but Jaden Greathouse is the best guy in the slot for me. He just is, because he's more of an all-around player. But part of that is, even though I think he's a better player than Jordan Faison, I think he'd be foolish not to have times where those two kids aren't on the field together. And we've seen them on the field together, and it's dynamic. So I think Jaden can play X, I think Jaden can play slot. I think Jaden can even do some boundary stuff in certain situations, the way that Mike Denbrock's use that position. Because Mike Denbrock will do a lot of things where he'll have his X like in reduced looks where he's got to get across the field. He'll have his X off the ball and go in motion into a trips. So those are all things that I think Jaden Greathouse can do. Some of the stop routes, like the whole route package is different. So I think there's more that Jaden can do as an X in Mike Denbrock's offense than what he did in the offense for Jared Parker and Tommy Rees. It's just a little bit different usage. And so I think we'll see him move around a lot more. And when he's moving around, then that's opportunities to get him on the field with those other two guys. And then, of course, the other thing is Harrison's going to get a chance to be the team's primary kick returner and punt returner too. And so that's going to be more opportunities to get his speed and his big playability on the field and use it on the field. And so that helps kind of split things up. Or you could have Faison as the punt returner, Harrison as the kick returner, and that's more ways to get, you know, your dynamic athletes to the football. So that's another way they can do it. Ronnie Reeves, how likely will Jason Onye take over a starting spot on the D-line? If we're talking 2024, it's only if there's an injury. If we're talking 2025, I fully predict Jason to be a starter in 2025. The only way he's going to be a starter in 2024 is if there's an injury, in my opinion. Shamrock Sean, how run-heavy do y'all think Mike Denbrock will be this upcoming season? I don't think he'll be run heavy or passive. I think he's going to be pretty balanced. That's what I think. I mean, Notre Dame's going to run the football this year, but Notre Dame's going to throw the football as well. You don't go 11 personnel to run the ball a million times. I mean, you're going 11 personnel to be an explosive, balanced offense, and that's what he wants to be. I could see them being a 250-200 team, 250 passing, 200 rushing, 260, 220, 250, 230, something like that. I could see all those type of things. They'll be pretty balanced. There's going to be some games where I think Notre Dame just may run out and go for 300-plus yards because they're just killing some team up front, and they just can't handle their size and speed. But I think in a lot of the big games, it's going to be more balanced. Against the better teams, they're going to have to be more balanced. I don't know that they're going to be good enough to just come out and run on Georgia and just run, or just throw on Georgia and just throw. I think it's the balance will be the key, in my opinion, with those guys. That's going to be that's something that I want to see if they can kind of figure that part out, is really matching that balance to where at the end of the year, they could be 260, 220, pass versus run. And that looks great. 480, they're top 10 in yards. They're top 10 in yards per play. They're top 10 in scoring. But in the big games, they were heavy towards one and not the other, or they struggled in one area and couldn't have that balance to win those games. It's going to be about, can you be balanced when it matters most? That's really going to be the key. And we're going to have to find out some answers for that. Now, I saw that Maurice Jones-Drew had Audric as running back 22. Is he nuts? Is he talking about the 22nd best running back in the Bobby, is he, answer me this. Is he talking about he's the 22nd best running back in the class, this draft class? Is that what he said? Because if that's what he said, then yes, he's nuts. But I don't want to say that if I, because I didn't hear him say that. So I don't know the answer to that question. But yeah, that would be an insane thing to say. Shamrock Sean, where will Cam Williams be in the depth chart in the wide receiver room? He'll be in the Z depth chart. Where on the Z depth chart? I don't know. But he'll be on the Z depth chart. Bobby S says more impact this season. Cam Williams, KK Smith, or Micah Gilbert. My guess would be Cam Williams, but as I talked about earlier, and one of the questions I got while you're out, Ryan, is buy or sell that Micah Gilbert has more catches than Cam Williams. And I said, I'm selling it, but I don't feel great about it. It won't shock me if it's Micah.
Right.
But the reason I'm going with Cam in this trio is because Cam still has something that they don't have on the roster outside of him, which is speed and a long, tall, 200 plus pound presence. They have speed in a 6'1", 175, shifty Chris Mitchell. They have speed in a 5'10", built like a running back, Jaden Harrison. They don't have a 6'2", 205-pound, long-armed, muscular kid like Cam. And with Micah's skill set is similar to Jaden Thomas. It's similar to Bo Collins. It's kind of similar-ish to what you're going to ask Deion Colsey to do. You don't have anybody like Cam. And so when you start putting a skill set together to how are we going to go attack this opponent, you're going to find a way to make room for what Cam does, where Micah's going to have to beat out Jaden Thomas and Bo Collins and Deion Colsey for reps.
Right.
So that's why, and same thing with KK Smith. I like KK a lot. He's looked good so far. But when you get into games, does his skill set distinguish in any way from Greathouse, Jaden Harrison, Jordan Faison, Chris Mitchell? Not really. It gets back to even if you think those two guys are more advanced than Cam, they are. I still come back to the fact, Ryan, that Cam has a skill set and a body type that they simply just do not have on this roster anywhere else. Sure.
Well, I mean, if we're projecting him to the Z receiver spot, right? I mean, outside of Chris Mitchell, there's just not a lot of guys that fit comfortably into the Z. I mean, like Jaden Greathouse could play Z. Like you have a couple of guys that could still play Z, but ultimately I think Cam's a pretty seamless fit there. I would put it like this. I think Micah could play in 2024 if you needed him to play. I just think that more likely if Micah does outsnap Cam and outproduce Cam, it's because there were a couple injuries at that boundary receiver where you like needed him to play, you know, like I think necessity would be more of the reason because again, I think Micah could play, but I mean, right now you're in a completely different spot than you were last year. Cause I mean, again, as long as Deion Colsey's healthy, you have Bo Collins, you have Jaden Thomas, you have Deion Colsey, like you have some big body guys finally from a depth perspective. So unless something injury-wise, something happens to the boundary, I would take Cam. But again, like you're only one or two injuries though into the boundary away from like Micah having to play at that point, right? So that's kind of where things could get topsy-turvy a little bit.
Ryan, this question was asked while you were gone, and okay. I didn't respond to it. Bobby S. said, I saw Maurice Jones-Drew had Aldrick Estime as back number 22. Is he nuts? And I asked for clarification, and Archer said he just looked it up. And he said, yes, he has Maurice Jones-Drew has Aldrick Estime, a number 22. He said he has him behind both Louisville and Georgia running backs, and he has him behind Mayan Williams.
How can he have behind Mayan Williams?
What in the absolute F are you talking about? Like, I love Maurice Jones-Drew. Maurice Jones-Drew is a player. I don't know that I've ever really heard him much as an analyst, so I can't speak to it. But that's the kind of analysis he's giving, as a former NFL running back, you're going to watch this film and have him behind Mayan freaking Williams and the two Louisville kids? Are you nuts?
Well, I just saw what Eric Santini said in the chat that had Frank Gore Jr. at number 4. My guys, I watched Frank Gore Jr. I put a PFA grade on Frank Gore Jr. He's not that guy, man.
He is. That is nuts.
You know what it is? It seems like he has a little bit of a bias towards smaller backs. I mean, and that makes sense because he was a short back, right? I mean, like, because I'm looking at this list that has Blake Corum at 3. I like Blake Corum, but like, he's a shorter guy. Frank Gore Jr. is 5'7" and some change. He's got Ray Davis in there, who's a shorter back. Bucky Irving is. I like Bucky Irving, but he's a shorter back. Like, it seems like he likes his.
I mean, are we acting like Audric's 6'4"? You know what I mean? Like that's so Ryan.
It's like jealousy. It's like he looked at Audric, is like, man, I wish I looked like that when I played. So I'm gonna be really.
That is the weirdest. That is the weirdest thing I've ever. Like, if you had him ninth behind those eight guys, I'd be like, dude, that's a really bad ranking. There's no way Audric's ninth behind those guys. But to have him 20, and somebody actually said, actually, he's actually 23rd, not even 22nd.
Whoa.
I'm gonna look this up, Ryan. I gotta see this. Maurice Jones-Drew RB rankings. I gotta find this because that is absolutely nuts.
Yeah,
absolutely nuts.
It's like Chris Sims. It's like Chris Sims' wide receiver and quarterback rankings. I mean, yeah. Some guys just. They're analysts, so, man. They're not.
Evaluated. Trey Benson, number one. Will Shipley, two. Blake Corum, three. Frank Gore, four. So we have Jalen Wright, five. We all saw these. Ray Davis, six. Bucky Irving, seven. Tyrone Tracy, eight. Jonathan Brooks, nine. Braylon Allen's 10. Marshawn Lloyd, 11. Jace McClellan, 12. Rasheen Ali, 13. Keelan Robinson. Rasheen Ali. You do. You've tweeted about him a lot. Keelan Robinson, 14. Cody Schrader, 15. Jawar Jordan, 16. Isaac Garendo, 17. Mayan Williams, 18. Dylan Johnson, 19. George Halani, 20. Dewan Edwards, 21. Kendall Milton, 22. And then Audric Estime, 23.
Did it say what round grade he has on him? I assume he thinks he's an undrafted free agent.
It then, gotta be.
At 23.
Yeah. Gotta be. I mean, have we ever seen that? I mean, I'm going to go to this draft history thing and look up running backs because.
Probably back in the day, maybe, but not recently.
I mean, yeah, that's like borderline undrafted right there. That is a bad ranking.
Oh, yeah. It's probably, if he's 23rd, he probably has him as a PFA, at least, I would say. But that's. That's weird. It's a weird, weird list. I mean, like, cause like, I would even like say it like this, Mayan Williams, right? Number 18 overall, Mayan Williams. What the heck does Mayan Williams do better than Audric Estime? Name me like a single thing he does better.
Get hurt.
He certainly doesn't produce more. Stay healthy.
Gets hurt.
More.
He gets hurt better than Audric Estime. Certainly does that. Right. I mean, that is really bad.
Bad.
This is why I tell people just because, like, there's, like, I've heard people say that, well, I won't get into that, but coaches should be this because that's how the players are represented. I'm like, that has nothing to do with it. Coaching is nothing about playing. And being an analyst, like, I know guys that played football and were really good who couldn't talk their way out of a wet paper bag about the game. They weren't actually smart football players. They just were great. They instinctively knew how to play, but they weren't guys that could go coach, right? Like, why wasn't Michael Jordan a better GM? Why wasn't Magic a better coach? Because just because you're a great player, and even if you have a great mind for the game as a player, doesn't mean it translates to coaching. That's the point. It's a completely different thing. And it doesn't mean that you're an analyst. Well, that guy played in the league. So, like, and nobody feels this way more than people that played in the league. Like, they think that they played, so they know more than ever. Where'd you play? What does that have to do with anything?
Someone sent me Steve Smith Sr. has been doing wide receiver breakdowns, and like, again, like, I love listening to former players from like their experience, technique, like that type of stuff. Right. But like, it doesn't make you an evaluator, bro. Like, it doesn't make you an evaluator at all. Because, I mean, I would argue that whole list is very biased in a lot of ways, right? Like, especially early on, they were talking about a lot of smaller backs, which I just think that's, I don't know. It's really bad. We should get Maurice Jones-Drew on the podcast to explain it.
Yes.
I would love to hear the explanation. Yes. Honestly, yes. I might tweet at him.
Do it. I mean, if he'll come on and talk about it, like, I'd love to hear it. I mean, you know, that's a bad list, dude. That's a really
bad list. He's notoriously really bad, though. Every single year, everyone talks about his running back rankings being awful, like, absolutely terrible. So, yeah, he's notorious for that.
Oof, boy. Yeah. All right, let's get to this one.
Shamrock Sean, do y'all think ESPN is overhyping, underhyping, or rightfully ranking Notre Dame at preseason?
Well, didn't they have them like what, fifth or sixth?
Yeah, they had them high, right?
In the most ranked. I think it's fine. where they have them ranked. If we're going to say overhyping from the technical sense, I don't know that I'd have them as high as five. Right. Six or to like eight.
Seven.
Six to eight is probably where I'm at, just because they still have a lot to prove.
Sure.
You know, I'd have Ohio State ranked ahead of them. I'd have Texas ranked ahead of them. I would have Georgia ranked ahead of them. I'd have to really kind of go through the list, but those are three off the top of my head that I definitely have ranked ahead of them. But we're splitting hairs, Ryan, 5 to 8. Like, to me, when you say overhyping, that means you're taking a team that should be 15th and you're putting them in the top five, or a team that should be borderline top. Like, remember a couple years ago when they had North Carolina and Texas A&M in like the top seven, and you're like, neither one of these teams are going to sniff the top 10 this year. Like, that's overhyping. They've got Notre Dame in a range that I'm fine with. If you have Notre Dame anywhere from 5 to 10, I'm not going to argue with you. I'd say 10's too low and argue 5's just a skosh too high, just based on what they have coming back, their talent, the schedule, all that kind of stuff. But I think that's fine. I think they're pretty close. And I'll be honest with you, Ryan, I'm trying to find their way too early top 25, this is one of the first years I read through it, and I don't remember off the top of my head have anything where I was like, what? Like, you have that team where?
It seems like they're very friendly to Notre Dame this year.
Well, interesting, so. They always kind of, whenever Notre Dame has a chance to be good, they'll do that so they can get the push out of it. Yeah.
Right.
So see here, you've got Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Oregon 3. That's probably a little too high for me, but Dan Lanning's done a great job there. They lost more than Notre Dame as far as like the really big time guys. At the same time, they got a lot coming back, and Dan Lanning's been more successful than Marcus Freeman so far through 2 years. I mean, his teams have been better than Notre Dame's team so far. So I'm a big problem with that. Texas at 4, Notre Dame at 5, Ole Miss at 6. You can make a case for Ole Miss being ahead of Notre Dame with what they have coming back, plus they were better last year, plus they've had a really good portal session. Missouri 7, that's probably a little too high for me. Penn State 8, probably a little too high for me. Bama 9, Utah 10, that's an interesting one, which I don't necessarily disagree with because Utah's got a lot coming back next season. Arizona 11, that's too high. LSU 12. Michigan 13, Oklahoma 14. Hey, that's all going to depend on Jackson Arnold, really, at the end of the day. Florida State 15, I'd have them a little higher, but I'm fine with 15. You make cases a little bit higher, a couple spots here or there. Tennessee 16, Oklahoma State 17, NC State 18. That one was interesting. Clemson 19, I'd actually have Clemson higher. Kansas State 20. Again, it's going to depend on Avery Johnson. Louisville 21, Kansas 22, Kentucky 23, Miami 24, Texas A&M 25. They dropped out Washington, SMU, and Iowa. Just missed USC, Washington, SMU, Iowa, Wisconsin. That's one of the most, that's fair, lists that I've seen from ESPN in the top 10, top 25 in a long time. Sure. So huge props to, I think Mark Schlabaugh put that together. Huge props to Mark Schlabaugh for a pretty fair list. Like, no overhyping of a team that doesn't warrant it. I mean, you say, Notre Dame 5, what have they done? Fair, all right. Ole Miss is more proven. But Notre Dame went 10-3 last year. Was a pretty good football team. You know what I mean? Like, so that's fair. I thought you were going to see, like, A&M top 15, and 25's fair. I mean, I don't know that I'd have A&M in the top 25, but they'd be somewhere maybe 23-30. Because there is talent coming back, and they finally have a good coach. I mean, their schedule's kind of tough and all that, but that's fair. I mean, none of those were like, dude, that's stupid. Yeah, that's crazy. Like UNC and A&M being in the like top 5-7 a couple years ago. I was like, wow, that's no way that's happening. So I'm fine with that. I think there's a very fair list, and I think Notre Dame at 5, I'm okay with it. I probably would have them 6 or 7, Ryan. That's just me. Yeah, but
seven was the number that I had in my head overall. Yeah. So.